I get buckets.
And welcome to Blue Wire Buckets. This is Samus Fandiari from the Light Years podcast. Tonight we have Ricky O'Donnell from Cash Considerations, Jovan Buha from Clip City podcast, and Shamet Dua from In The Know. How you guys doing?
Doing well, man.
Just kind of throw the broad, how you doing? No one wants to really jump in. No one wants to talk over each other. So we kind of had a boring slate of games tonight. I feel like everyone was all hyped up for 2-2 and proceed to get the most boring game of both Philly, Toronto, and Denver, Portland series, right?
Yeah, and that's why I'm actually of the belief that I don't know how much I actually want to read into either one of these games because it's felt like these two series have gone either way with both teams winning on each other's home courts. It's been, you know, such a tight contested series up to this point that, you know, part of me wonders if the road teams just kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit in these game fives, kind of knowing they had the security of going back for game six. I do think that, you know, just looking at the series with how they've gone, you would probably favor Toronto and Denver respectively kind of overall. But I don't know if there was like some great adjustment or revelation from either of these games tonight. I think it was just they kind of got out of hand from the beginning in the first half. And then from that point on, the road teams kind of just never recovered. But I don't want to overreact necessarily to either one of these.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start on Toronto, Philly. I mean, my first takeaway was, it was more just Philly was awful. Like Ben Simmons wasn't in the game.
Yeah, the Embiid thing is definitely like if he's not himself and if he's going to be the way he's been the last like couple games, the Philly doesn't have a chance. So that I guess would be the one thing that I would take away from this game, especially is if Joel Embiid is not engaged. Or I mean, I don't know if engaged is even the right word, but he just has not been himself. 8 turnovers tonight. You know, they really bothered him with those double teams. You know, Marc Gasol has defended him pretty well all series. Like, I just think that, you know, if Joel Embiid is not like the game three version of himself, which was his best game in the series, Philly really doesn't have a chance. And especially when, you know, JJ was 1-for-6, Tobias and Jimmy didn't really, you know, they struggled on top of Ben Simmons not really doing much. So they really need, you know, three of those guys to be clicking to have any, you know, any semblance of a chance. But if Embiid is turning the ball over 8 times, like Philly's offense, I just don't think they could keep up with the Raptors.
Yeah, both Embiid and Simmons were really terrible today. I think Embiid, he was dealing with something. The Sixers said that he had an illness before the game. We also know he had the gastro problems earlier in the season. When they're not getting anything from Embiid or Simmons, and this was one of the rare games where it felt like Philly was actually better with Embiid off the floor, the offense just devolves into Jimmy Butler running pick and roll. That works against a lot of teams, but when Toronto's sticking Kawhi on him, it's a whole different story. Butler has been really good at times in this series, but he was never supposed to do it himself, even with them running a more steady diet of pick and rolls through him during the playoffs. There's just no way Philly can win when Embiid is, you know, basically giving him nothing. Simmons, almost a no-show tonight. I mean, 7 points. He had as many turnovers as he did field goal attempts with 5 tonight. This was just a pathetic showing from Philly, really, and Toronto will have a chance to finish out the series in 6.
I know that Embiid and Simmons have kind of been the talk during the series, but I want to bring up Tobias Harris, who I feel Philly spent quite a lot of capital to acquire, and I don't know. I feel like he's been largely mediocre throughout this series. He had a good game. What was it? Game 2? No, it was game 3. He had a good game 3, I would say, where his impact maybe went beyond the box score, but he really hasn't been there in terms of a difference maker, and they're going to head into free agency asking the question, is Tobias Harris worth a max? And, you know, he put up 15 points on 12 shots tonight, which is okay, but he also had a massive plus minus of minus 34. So it's tough. They're going to need more out of him for sure if they want to get back in the series.
I mean, Jovan can speak to Tobias. I don't think the Clippers were particularly disappointed losing him, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I think with Tobias, you know, that was one of the criticisms that you heard from people around the team and the coaching staff. Like, he went missing a lot of fourth quarters. You know, there was a reason why Lou kind of got all this attention as a closer and hitting all these game-winning shots, because Tobias, you know, he if you look at his scoring splits, a lot of times, you know, he'd have 24 points, but 20 of those would come through the first three quarters. And then the fourth quarter, he'd have a bucket or two. But I think, you know, it's interesting you made that free agency point, because I think a lot of people viewed Tobias as the insurance for Jimmy Butler. And, you know, there was some locker room drama earlier in the season, and people were kind of writing off Butler returning to Philly. But now, you know, with the way the playoffs have gone, and Jimmy, I think, has kind of established himself as, you know, if Embiid's number one, Jimmy's probably 1.5 on this team. You know, they might end up keeping him and letting Tobias walk. So I think that might be the most interesting thing outside of maybe Brown getting fired potentially if they lose in six.
Yeah, my thing with Jimmy is, like, we got the full range of Jimmy Butler this season, at least on a national level. But end of the day, there's only so many guys who can perform at that level in the playoffs that he can. And for all the fit issues and kind of all the drama and stuff, it's really hard to not want to keep a guy like that, even if you don't think he's worth giving a 5-year max.
And Butler also has the value of, like, being the only guard on the entire team. The Sixers are just running out so many traditional front court players in there that, you know, Butler, while of course he's not a nominal point guard, he sort of assumes those duties by running so many of the pick and rolls and initiating so much of the offense, especially in the playoffs. I would totally agree that Butler seems more important to them than Harris now, but man, they gave up a nice package to get Tobias Harris, and to see him struggle that way in these playoffs, and Redick, another poor game for him, 1-6 from the field, only 3 points. He is free agency looming as well, correct? So definitely some major free agent ramifications in this series for both teams, obviously, but especially for the Sixers.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's move this forward to Portland-Denver, which was also kind of pretty much over in the first half, just like the Toronto-Philly game. I don't know that I can read anything from tonight's game other than Nikola Jokic has been kind of my favorite story of the playoffs, mm-hmm. because he had all the kind of questions if his game would translate in the playoffs, like how's it going to look when teams hunt him? And it's just kind of great seeing, as dominant as he was in the regular season, it completely translates.
So yeah, I think Jokic has shown that he can show out with the best of them at the highest level. To me, you know, as a Pelicans podcaster, I'm biased against Portland. I never really bought into them as a team, given what the Pelicans did to them last year. So, you know, the Portland handled OKC very well, and Lillard was on fire during that whole series. But you're seeing Denver defend Portland a lot of the same ways that the Pelicans defended Portland, in which they'll have Millsap aggressively chasing and trapping one of their ball handlers, Lillard or McCollum, while they drop Jokic back and they put him on Al-Farouq Aminu, essentially, and they're daring guys like Aminu or Evan Turner to make those shots while Jokic can kind of sit back and patrol the paint and protect the rim. Now, I think the Pelicans personnel with Davis and Drew may have been a little bit better suited for that, but it's paying off almost the same way for Denver. I mean, Millsap is a fantastic defender, and if Lillard isn't going to be on fire, they're going to need other people to step up, which you're going to live with Aminu becoming a volume type scorer.
Yeah, Lillard was so phenomenal in the first round against OKC. At that point, he looked like, you know, he was the best player in the entire playoffs. I think that in this series, Jokic has been the best player, and that's kind of set the tone. As you said, the way they've defended Lillard has been really impressive. There's just a lot of depth on Denver. That's the thing I kept coming back to watching this game. They have guys like Gary Harris, Will Barton. They can throw at those two scoring guards to try to slow them down a little bit. I think Paul Millsap is just playing phenomenal right now. 24 points tonight. He has so much defensive responsibility for Denver, covering up for some of the things Jokic can't get to. But he's been so solid on both ends of the floor. And Denver's just got a lot of different guys who can beat you. And when Murray's dialed in the way he has been for most of this series, that's a really impressive team.
Yeah. The other thing to note tonight, Lillard and McCollum combined for 37 shots, only scored 34 points. I don't know that Denver can win a game without at least one of those two going off. I kind of feel like when they go back to Portland, it's unlikely they'll both be shut down in that fashion.
Yeah, this feels like a 7-game series. I think, you know, proverbial gun to my head, I'd probably go Denver in 7. I am with Schmidt on yes, on the Portland slander. I've not, you know, I picked OKC to win that series, and I promised myself, I've not been a big Portland fan over the last few years. I was just up there actually for game 3, and I have to say, I love the city. They have great fans, but I just have not been a big believer in them and their core. And I promised myself I'd pick whoever they played in the first round to beat them, no matter who it was, basically, other than San Antonio. And, you know, they ended up playing OKC. I picked OKC. I was wrong on that. But part of me wonders how much of that might have been us overrating and overestimating OKC. And now seeing this news today with Paul George having shoulder surgery and then Russ having another procedure. OKC was definitely more banged up than we knew. But I think it's time to give Denver props, because I think they were the mystery team of the playoffs. They're really the one team outside of maybe the Clippers that we hadn't seen in the Western Conference playoffs the last couple of years. And a lot of people were doubting them. And, you know, they had the least playoff experience of any of the teams in the West. I know I was a bit of a skeptic on them. I'd picked them to get to the second round, but I could have easily seen them losing to San Antonio, which they almost did. And I think now they've shown through that series, through this series, that even if they lose to Portland, I do think Denver is legitimate. And moving forward, they're going to be in that conversation. What, you know, maybe not on the Golden State Houston level, but they're on that next tier, whatever tier that is. And I think that the future is bright for them.
Yeah, it's been a huge series for Jamal Murray. Always been a fan of his game. I just generally like irrational confidence players, anywhere from, you know, Steph Curry to Lou Williams, that sort of thing. I never kind of knew what to make of him, you know, because young player, he dropped 40 in a game and then followed up with a handful of like 8-point games. But 34 of the last two games tonight, 18-9 in basically 3/4 of work. I mean, he's been phenomenal for them, and you can kind of see, if he really does continue to build on this and take that next step, the core of him and Jokic and their myriad of young wings, you know, that could be something.
They're really starting to pick at Enes Kanter defensively. Now, in the OKC series, everyone was like, wait a minute, can he actually play defense? Well, it turns out in OKC's offense is as bad as we think it is. But no, Denver is really trying to take advantage of Kanter in space, and Jamal Murray has been phenomenal in that high middle pick and roll.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, not much more to go into these two games. I kind of feel like it's best to use the rest of our time to get into game 5 of Boston-Milwaukee and more Golden State-Houston on Wednesday. First off, I guess I'll start with you guys. Do any of you think Boston have a chance to come back in the series?
I don't think so either.
I guess they should have gone name by name before to make it easier.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way Boston loses, what, 3 more games? No. Yeah, sorry.
Milwaukee loses.
Yeah, Boston can't lose 3 more games either, technically.
That's true.
I mean, at this point, I'm just gearing up for Giannis Kawhi. That is going to be a series. That is going
to
be special. Oh,
absolutely. I'm not willing to write off Philly with regards to that, although when Toronto plays like this, it's really hard to see them losing. But yeah, so I guess we can just move on from the Boston-Milwaukee series, because, you know, no one's really thinking. Given how inconsistent they've been all year, it seems improbable that they will connect as a team and come together for 3 straight games.
It's also a bad matchup at this moment. I mean, last year, the hospital Celtics took Milwaukee to 7, but that wasn't the same Bucks team. I mean, now you have Bud, now you have all these shooters, your wings are healthy, and Eric Bledsoe and George Hill are playing really well, so it's a handful for Boston.
All right, guys, we've got an announcement to make. Blue Wire is teaming up with Harry's to make sure our listeners shave comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blades, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all that for $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors. It's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality, durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer at harrys.com/bluewire. All the Harry's blades come 100% quality guaranteed. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for only $3.
Quick question for you guys. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
You know, I think we know the big names in free agency that this summer, KD, Kawhi, Kyrie, Jimmy, Clay. I think most of those guys have improved their perception. Like we just talked about Jimmy, how it seemed like he might be gone from Philly, but now, you know, you don't know. And he's probably reasserted his dominance and just how good he actually is. KD and Kawhi might be the two best players in basketball right now. And then, you know, Clay, I think, you know, Clay is Clay and, you know, he'll probably get the max from Golden State. But for Kyrie, does this series and kind of the way this season has gone with all the stuff with him and the young guys and the weird comments in the media, does that change the way you guys value him or look at him? And would you still feel comfortable giving him a max contract if you were Boston or another team? Or am I just overthinking this?
No, I personally would still feel comfortable. Like he's temperamental. He's kind of moody. You saw it this year. I don't know that I'd feel comfortable going year to year with him, but if I have, I'd still feel comfortable giving him a 4 or 5 year max, depending, because he is 27. And if it doesn't work out in the fashion you want, you can trade him. You know, you can kind of cut your loss and let someone else take that. It's unlikely he's going to be a, you know, kind of cancer contract unless it, you know, unless he gets hurt or something, but that's a risk with anyone, right? But it does, you definitely have to consider a lot of variables around him to get the best out of him, more so than obviously Kawhi or KD, who you can
I'm with Sam here. I don't hesitate to give Kyrie a max contract, but it's clear that the way the Celtics are structured as is not enough to compete with the top dogs in the league. Now, they have their moments. They have a really high ceiling, especially if the young players pan out. But I really do think with Kyrie's like 1A, they need a 1B or someone maybe better than Kyrie. Cough, cough, Anthony Davis. But they really do need another bona fide star, because when you look at the ingredients that make up a contender, outside of Houston, well, I guess there's Toronto as well, but like, you know, typically you have a top 7-ish player on the team. Kyrie is borderline top 10. He's really good. And then you have a litany of players that are, you know, top 20 or top 30 and under. And I don't think Boston has that. The number two guy after Kyrie is arguably who? Al Horford, right? And he's probably a top 30 player, but he's on the edge of that, I think. And the rest of the roster down is not as close if you line them up to Golden State and some of the other teams. It's they don't have the same firepower that people expect them to have.
See, my whole thing is they were better last year with Kyrie and with, quite frankly, younger versions of Tatum and Brown and no Hayward. So, I mean, to me, it's a lot more of a chemistry issue this year, which is a lot more complicated, maybe a little more worrisome, because we're not talking about like there being a gaping basketball black hole in the sense of like, you know, OKC, okay, no one can shoot the ball, right? Like that's a pretty obvious thing what you want to find, whereas like an interpersonal problem is a far more complicated one. I don't know. I kind of feel like that muddies Kyrie's value in some way. But at the same time, you saw him with a young Celtics team essentially have the best record in the East up until he got hurt.
Yeah, I agree. I do think there is a little bit of a Brad Stevens component. Like, obviously, he's a fantastic coach, but there's something to be said where year after year, your team's shot profile, it looks a little bit antiquated, where they're a bit heavy in the mid-range, they're a bit allergic to the free throw, or getting to the free throw line, and their attempts at the rim aren't as high as you would expect a team full of young athletic wings might have. So I watched their offense, and you're right, in terms of chemistry, it doesn't seem like there's a good flow to it. There's kind of like, all right, Kyrie's going to do his thing, then maybe it's my turn, and then Jason Tatum's trying to be Kobe light sometimes, and no one really has an idea of what's going on. And then the bench comes in, you have, you know, Morris, who's going to put up a shot every time he touches the ball, and then Terry Rozier trying to play for a contract. It's an awkward fit. I'd like to see them with a maybe dedicated like offensive coordinator as a coach, that putting in maybe different looks than Stevens, because he has a very egalitarian offense, kind of like Kerr, and I don't know if that's the best fit for such a young roster.
Yeah, I think Hayward was meant to be that sort of veteran stabilizing presence for them, and obviously he hasn't been the same player since the injury. He's quietly just been brutal in this series. He's playing 30 minutes a game. He's only averaging 7.5 points. Cannot hit a three to save his life. It's just been generally inefficient from all over the floor. So when you're not getting anything out of Hayward, I feel like too often the offense just devolves into the Kyrie show. It turns into a system where it's like my turn, your turn. Even though the Celtics were at, you know, an even bigger stage than this last year with younger players taking the biggest role on the team, it's just been the same issue we've seen with the Celtics throughout the regular season. There's no cohesion. It doesn't really look like there's any joy in them playing basketball. And I think Milwaukee's got him on the brink of delivering a knockout punch here.
Yeah, definitely. So let's move forward to Warriors Houston. I got to start with this question. Obviously, I'm close to the Warriors, and that's my team I cover. How much do you guys believe Houston can win the series? Give me a percentage. Let's go down. Let's start with Ricky.
I would say 30% chance.
I'll go 35%. I actually picked Houston to win the series before the series, and that was just based on the way I'd just seen Golden State play the Clippers for six games. You know, they've obviously increased their effort and focus a bit more than that series, but it does seem like at times this team is just kind of coasting still, and they're talented enough to get away with it, but I think Houston might be the one team that could bite them with that. So I do still expect them to win the series, but if it's 4 days from now and Houston won in six, or they're going to game seven, I would not be that surprised.
I will give them a 45% chance. Well, we're incrementally increasing, aren't we? But the tiebreaker for me is, you know, the reason I'm not outright favoring them is game seven is going to be in Golden State. So that's tough for me to envision Houston winning, but I think Houston's absolutely in it. And I think it's also a reflection of how much like the Celtics, the Warriors are kind of discombobulated from an outsider's point of view. They're not on the same page in the sense that it doesn't look fun for them. It looks tasking. The last series kind of reflected that. I think Houston is playing their games to get in their head. Obviously, there's a lot of media coverage of Klay wants to do this, Durant wants to do this. So there's a lot of extraneous drama surrounding the team that may be impacting them. And that's why I think the series is probably going to go to seven.
So I might be the most pessimistic of you, because I'd pretty much call it a toss-up going forward. The thing that stuck out to me through four games, and it's been a gradual thing since game one, is like at this point the Warriors are playing 5.5, maybe six guys. Like, they're outside of Looney playing a little better, I don't know that there's anyone on the bench that Kerr can go to, and that's pretty much, in my opinion, you know, that's why Houston won game three and kind of got into it in game four, just seeing like PJ Tucker is fresher than the Warrior players Austin Rivers is giving them something off the bench, and everyone on the Warriors is going 45 minutes, and they're just kind of slower to loose balls at this point. So I don't know how much that's just kind of, you know, all it takes is them to just kind of get hot from outside to win a game, and then it turns the whole series. But I mean, this is by far the least deep Warriors team I've seen, and they just look tired.
I will say, from like a historical perspective, there have been some vibes for me of the 2003, I want to say it was the Western Conference semifinal. Yeah, Lakers-Spurs.
Lakers.
Where now the Lakers are coming off the three-peat, but the Warriors are coming off 3 and 4 years. So it's even been a longer run than the Lakers. And, you know, that one series where everyone had kind of, you know, thought that, all right, the Lakers are going for their fourth straight, but the Spurs kind of, the Spurs had kind of been in a Houston situation. They'd already won a title, you know, a few years before, but during that run, the Lakers had beat them year after year, and then they finally got over the hump in 2003 and won the title. So I think if anything, we're starting to see the effects of fatigue on the Warriors as well. And you know, that core that had been so deep and so good for so long, you know, a guy like Sean Livingston now, I think is shown a lot of signs of aging and falling off. And even Bogut, you remember how good he was in 2016. He had his moments in the Clippers series, but he hasn't been the same and has kind of been phased out of this series. So I do think that you're starting to see the effects of aging and just kind of, you know, fatigue of year after year playing into June.
So here's a question for the field. How would a healthy DeMarcus Cousins change the series? And by healthy, I mean this year's version of him, not, you know, his prime pre-Achilles, but this year's version of DeMarcus Cousins.
Basically, yep. What he was up until the quad injury. I think it'd be huge. I mean, he would have his issues versus Houston in the sense of, like, obviously he's not going to play 30 minutes a game versus them, but he's a good NBA player who can at least play 20 minutes, 15 minutes. I mean, they're not getting anything from anyone outside of the death lineup right now. Just even with his flaws covering the pick and roll and stuff, like, at least it's someone he can throw out there for a period of time.
That's fair. So you can continue.
Go ahead.
Okay. So when he was with the Pelicans, the Pelicans played Houston pretty well in a lot of games. Now, there were games where Houston absolutely murdered DeMarcus in the pick and roll. I mean, murdered, right? Because you can't really put DeMarcus out in space with Harden in front of him, Capella behind him. That's either a bucket or a lob. It's a bad idea. But there were times where the Pelicans put DeMarcus on a guy like Mabute and just kind of floated him around and forced those guys to make shots. I wonder if they could do something similar with P.J. Tucker. Now, P.J. Tucker's more than capable of making shots, and the Rockets are probably going to screen and screen and screen and try to force a switch. But from a defensive standpoint, it's interesting. But I do believe that if Capella's not on the floor, if you can get DeMarcus minutes with Nene or whoever else, I mean, the Rockets really aren't rolling that deep out there. But try to avoid it when Capella's on the floor. I'd be interested in seeing how that looks.
Oh,
yeah, the small ball lineup in the last game was really fascinating. I saw somewhere that Tucker played 48% of his minutes at center in the last victory. You would just never think that at someone 6'4", 6'5", but man, he was so tough, so good in that last game. He sort of symbolizes, I think, everything Houston wants its role players to be around James Harden. It seems like it was only a few years ago that Maury's plan was just sort of going all in on superstars, and they were committed to Dwight Howard as that guy next to Harden. Well, you know, that sort of went out the wayside, and what they really built around him was just a team that fits so well around Harden. You have, most of the time, running these small ball lineups, five legitimate three-point threats in the lineup. They can switch most screens against Golden State. I mean, no one's going to be able to contest or cover Curry and Durant on, you know, the majority of the possessions of the game, but Houston has been so impressive fighting throughout this series. But what I keep coming back to is just Golden State's margin for error is so big. Even in the last game, I didn't think Golden State played particularly well, and they still had a look from Durant that was wide open and a look from Curry off the offensive rebound to tie the game, I think. So, you know, if a few of those shots start falling, if Steph gets it back, I still think Golden State is the favorite, but it's hard to watch this series and not really admire the way Houston's playing.
I will say this quickly in regards to DeMarcus Cousins. The Clippers privately were upset that he got injured. They felt that their best chance against the Warriors was with DeMarcus on the court. And you know, they're playing off of him dramatically. They welcomed any shot attempt from DeMarcus, even in the post. You know, they said they would take a DeMarcus Cousins one-on-one post up over any other shot from Steph, Clay, or KD. And then defensively, if you looked at game one, Lou Williams really struggled outside of the minutes DeMarcus Cousins was on the court. And, you know, it kind of lined up where he ended up playing against the second unit. And, you know, almost every basket Lou Williams had in that game one was against DeMarcus in the pick and roll. So I do agree with Sam that in kind of in theory and just kind of by being a productive body, he could help the Warriors. But I just don't know where that limit is, especially with, you know, having a Chris Paul or a James Harden going at him in the pick and roll. I do think that he does present a lot of defensive issues.
Right. I mean, if Kerr was willing to use him like a role player, he could definitely be an impact player, but he's DeMarcus Cousins. I don't know that they would have to have kind of gotten to a hole to tighten the leash on him, I guess. But either way, he's not playing in the series. There are reports he might be back later in the playoffs. The Warriors continue to advance, but it's irrelevant for this series. So the other main takeaway I have from this series is you guys mentioned, you know, kind of PJ Tucker being 6'6" and playing center in all those minutes. I do think it's interesting. That's kind of been what's frustrated KD more than anyone. He's still shooting very efficiently, but PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon and Harden a few times just essentially get underneath him to push out him out of the way for rebounds, which kind of turned both game three and game four. It's Kerr called it essentially, you know, they have a bunch of middle linebackers, but it has been effective for him having just that many guys who are essentially thick. I don't know how else to put it.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I guess let's take it forward. We got two game fives tomorrow. Give me your predictions. We'll get out of here. Let's start with Boston, Milwaukee. Ricky, who do you got?
I'll take Milwaukee in that one. I think that Budenholzer just has that team firing on all cylinders right now. Giannis was so tremendous in the last game. Boston looks totally out of sync, so I'll take Milwaukee to finish it off.
You have one?
I'm with Ricky. I think Milwaukee puts Boston to sleep.
Sharon?
You know, I wish I could say Boston and be a contrarian, but just emotionally, they don't seem like they're in a place that they can recover from.
Yeah, I think it's over too. All right, let's go to Golden State, Houston. Get out of here. I'll let you go first, Ricky. Okay.
Sorry. I'll take Golden State to bounce back and win that game. They have the home court again. I think that Curry is going to snap out of this little funk that he's been in. We saw how tremendous Durant was in game three. It still feels like he could just take over these playoffs and remind everyone that, you know, he's the best player in the sport at any given moment. So I'll take the Warriors with a bounce back victory.
I'll take the Warriors too. I will say, I think this is game seven for the Rockets. And obviously if they lose, game six would technically be their game seven, but I just think, you know, I think like Ricky said earlier, they will have to go to Oracle for game seven. And I just don't see them winning in that scenario. So if Houston has any chance to win this series, they have to win this one. And then they have to go back to Houston and win that. So I think you're going to see that level of urgency from them. It's just a matter of what Warriors team shows up. I think the good version of the Warriors shows up, and it's a close competitive game, but Golden State wins in the end.
I'm picking Houston. I think they get really hot for three this time.
I'm going to go on the fence with this one. I don't know. I'm going to pick Houston. I think they're going to make it interesting. I think it's going seven either way, though.